You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Monigar, the founder of Monigar.com, a small tech company based in the Akwesasne Indian Reservation. Monigar develops XR, aka extended reality, solutions and custom software with a focus on indigenous language revival, futurism, and culture.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm curious about the professional side of the community that you've been building. Do you work with languages other than your own, or are there other language revivalists that you're working with?
Yeah, and it depends on the project, because a lot of these languages, the endangered languages, they are documented. And for a while, I created bots for them and everything, but it goes back to connecting with my community, and they taught me, like, that is not my place to be doing that. So I absolutely stopped, and I would never put that work out to the public. It's just not my place to be working on someone else's language. That said, though, like, I have other communities that will reach out to me and they ask me to help. And in that situation, what I've been doing is, especially now with everyone's used to working online, I've been doing online training, and I show them, like, this is how I'm doing things with my language, and this is how your team with your language and culture can do it. And I do like a 4-day workshop, half day or full day workshops where I just let them know all the challenges, the pitfalls, things that worked for me, and then they can make a choice how they want to proceed with their own language revival.
The people that you're working with, are you seeing more concern among tribal members for making sure that those programs and those tools are coming from them? Are tribes becoming more aware of, you know, it's time for them to stake their claims?
Yes. And actually, there's entire groups on the internet that will hold those people accountable. If they're doing cultural appropriation or trying to speak for people that they have no business doing, they are held accountable and publicly shamed, as they should be. Even for me, too, I get called out and questioned by people that haven't grown up with me or know my family. And that's totally normal. In fact, I'm so used to it now, and it's understandable. One thing that I've seen a lot, and I still see in the tech industry especially, is I'll have non-natives. They don't know me. They didn't grow up with me. Without even asking me, they make these assumptions about me in the tech industry. And then they go on a spiel about wanting to save all my people in my community because they have the tech skills, because I certainly couldn't have those tech skills, you know, these assumptions that they have. So we do get that a lot. And it's not just here in my community, it's all the communities. We're calling it saviorism. They assume that we don't have tech skills or interest or knowledge. And that's not true at all. And it's real simple. It's nothing about us without us. Like, I would never go to, say, Craig's house and say, you know what? I found this recording of your grandfather, and now I speak for and represent your grandfather. People that do that and are exploitive, they just put themselves in a circle that they're going to have to deal with. I think one of the cool lessons I learned in life is, like, it's not for me to carry, because early in my career, I also fell into that where I was like, oh, I'm going to make it so we can all speak my language and it'll never be lost. And it was also fueled by the rage of the residential school trickle effect. And so it took a whole community of Akwesasne, really, whether they know it or not, some of them, to help me heal from that and learn better ways and get me out of that vicious circle. The whole point of speaking our language and communicating it is to be connected with our family and with our homelands too, our Mother Earth. It does connect us. It's not about saving or being a hero.
Is anyone else creating this kind of material with you? It seems like you're sort of a solitary creator. You don't have a staff.
Yeah, sometimes I do.
Who's helping you do this kind of work?
So there's a few older people in my community. They are my advisors, my mentors, they're fluent speakers. They keep me in check. They tell me if pronunciations are off. They help me improve my pronunciation. They actually have not wanted their voice on my stuff because the kind of work I do, you're kind of the front person. So you take all the punches, you take all the anger and all the miscommunications. So they're older people. They've been working with me and I do pay them as consultants. And then there's other speakers from other communities. I pay them to actually teach me. We meet online twice a week and I go through language and culture classes with them. And then they also mentor me and advise me when I have questions. Like I'm learning how to deal with angry people on the internet in a nicer way because my history has been like a temper. Like I have a temper and I swear, you know, so I'm learning a better, more appropriate way to navigate that. So yeah, those are the people. And I also hire remote contractors to help me with tech sometimes.
That's what I was curious about, is on the tech side too.
Yeah. So I've hired 3D graphic designers and sometimes they do get frustrated with some of the weird requests I had. And they said, you know, you should really learn this because you're coming up with these weird ideas. I don't know how to do this. So that's when I started learning 3D graphic design too. But I still hire graphic designers to work with me, like on texturing or modeling, you know, whatever I need, really. Even music composers.
But they may be outside the community.
Yeah, and they're all Ungwahumwe, all over. Most of them are from North America, though, Canada and USA.
I wanted to go back to something that you said about your elders who consult with you on native language use and pronunciation and so on and so forth. When I went to your site, I guess I'm thinking mostly of mohawklanguage.ca. You have a statement there in a few places that says, we're not providing English translations. If you want to know what these words are about, you too can hire a native language speaker as a consultant. And I thought this is something that creative professionals are trying to shift into, of saying my work has value, my knowledge has value. And I think that's a really interesting positive shift to see knowledge of this language has value, and you should be acknowledging that value if you want to know.
Yeah.
Do you see other people also sort of helping to shift that paradigm of people wanting to come in and extract information without any acknowledgement of its value?
Oh, I'm so glad you noticed that because I've been working really hard since September, consciously working hard to create that where people know, like, I am not a teacher. I'm not teaching. And that you need to work with teachers and fluent speakers and elders. Because I'm a nerd. I build software. I'm not a brain scientist. I'm not an astronaut. I build software. And I build this software because we have fluent speakers and teachers and elders from every background you can imagine that consult with me. And I pay them a fair compensation for their time. And then I also make sure that they know, what am I doing with this and why am I doing it, so that it's not presented in a disrespectful way.
Given again that you're talking about checking in with the really fluent speakers, your AIs that are speaking the language, is that digitally synthesized or is that recorded speakers?
It's both. Now, the ones that you probably saw, though, on Vimeo and on Mohawk Language, that's my voice. That's actually my voice. And I change it sometimes because I have different fluent speakers of different ages that work with me. As some of them don't even hear very well. So I even change my voice to be more like them. So sometimes I'm talking really low, sometimes high, you know.
But there's also digitally synthesized. I mean, do you have that kind of text reading working at this point for the language?
Yeah, and that's what I did in the 90s, but I don't have it for the public right now because I found a lot of the older people, the fluent speakers, found it really disturbing. So I'm waiting on that. And I understand why now. It's because if you're being heavily colonized and genocided, would you really like the idea of this robotic voice replacing you even as a teacher? Because that's what people do. They try to use that as a replacement to a human connection. So it's not public.
The text reader voice wasn't going over with the community.
No, not at all. And I loved it personally because I was like, because I'd have this same word over and over. And then I'd go to my grandfather and I would say the word and he wouldn't even correct me or anything. So I was like, oh, this is working. I'm actually learning how to speak better. But yeah.
We did a show a while back that was about assisted technologies, and it would seem that what you had programmed would be something that could be useful if someone in your community has vision problems and wants to be online and have a web page read in their language, but you feel like it's not quite ready for prime time in that way, or?
I think it's ready for techies, but right now, my community in particular, we're still facing really violent colonization where when I leave my house, we have border guards that we have to answer to when I leave or return from my home here. If I dare speak my language, I get threatened, harassed, even pulled into a back room. So we're navigating that. And to have a computerized voice speak our language and then to have non-natives say, hey, look, this teaches a language, that's way too triggering. We're not in a place where we can even support something like that. Like, we have to focus on supporting human beings right now.
This is definitely off topic from the project itself, but I can't help but ask, why are things so hardcore at the reservation up there?
So different people call it different things. I call it a reservation or a POW camp myself. So we have the borders of New York State, USA, Quebec, and Ontario, Canada. It's right on top of our reservation. So the section where I live at, to leave or return from our house, and it's the only way to go, if I take a right down the road, we have the CBSA, who are very violent. They can be really violent. So it's like a roulette game. I don't know if they're having a bad day or whatever.
The CBSA is what?
Canadian Border Service Agency. They're providing a service. If I take a left, I've got the U.S. border providing their service. And again, it's like a roulette game. If they're having a bad day, I have to pay for it. A lot of us do. And if I want to guarantee a bad day, I'll speak my language when they ask me. For real.
How would you feel if they addressed you in your language?
They do it sometimes, and it's pretty nasty because I've had one where he learned our language and he says, Sego Skenagoa. And that means, hello, like, are you at great peace? You know, are you feeling peaceful? That's another thing, because I think when I was a child, hearing my family, they're really good storytellers and they love to make people laugh and forget about the pain. So as a child, I would try to emulate that. And part of those storytelling is you'll put that person in the story and exaggerate so people are laughing. And I remember as a child trying to emulate that, my grandfather goes, whatever you do, don't ever lie. So I remember that to this day. So when I speak English and I leave my house, I always have to lie to these people, because if I say the truth in my language, like, the question is, where are you coming from? I'm coming from Gawanogagoa. I can't say that. I have to lie and say, I'm coming from Ontario, which is a lie to me.
The choices of how we think about these things, I think, are deeply rooted in language. It's like what it's all about.
Oh, so when he says, Sego Skenagoa, are you at peace? I truthfully said, Yah Skana, which means, no, I'm not really feeling that peaceful. It's not the end of the world. I don't feel really peaceful right when I go through here. He corrected me. So he learns our language, a few things, and then decides that he's going to be my teacher and correct me and tell me that I need to answer that, yes, I'm peaceful. I'm like, no, you don't do that to human beings. Try to, you know, control our voice.
Like, if you ask someone how they're doing, I mean, a lot of people just go, fine, thanks. But some people like me go, you really want to hear the story? They're like, no, shut up.
Please don't.
Sorry, I asked.
It's almost the equivalent of telling you you should smile more, except with that extra layer of, here I am, the authoritarian figure that can keep you from leaving this island, and you should smile more.
Yeah, it's like constant colonization.
You want to hear about my day?
Well, if you're going to speak our language, you need to learn how to speak our language.
Well, this has just been remarkable work, Monigar. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And if you would like more information about the work that Monigar is doing, you can visit mohawklanguage.ca online, or her website, monigar.com, and that's monigarr.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.